by Rashi Garson. Sukkot, the best kind of giving is thanksgiving.
So not to be hypocritical, especially with today's title, like me, Makir Tov, give Hakarat Tov to Torah Way, for giving the zechut of being Marbe Torah Berabim. Also for Johnny Radson for bugging and nudging me for almost a whole year, till eventually he got me here. Much appreciated. I've decided to speak about today the concept of Hodah, of gratitude, thanksgiving, and I feel justified in doing so because of the following reason. If we have a look on the source sheet very briefly, there's a well-known Gemara, Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis in Sukkot, that says that the Machlokes in Rabbi Yezer and Rabbi Akiva, as to what is the rationale, what is the reason that we go ahead and we keep Sukkot for 7 days and 8 days in Chutzaret, says that Tani Kibetukot Oshafti Ebenei Sena, the Jewish people dwelled in Sukkot, Anane Kavot Hayu, the Rabbi Yezer. Rabbi holds the what they actually were the clouds of protection, clouds of glory that Hashem set up to protect the Jewish people in the desert. Rabbi Akiva Mer Sukkot Mamash Asu Lahem. That in fact the reason we keep Sukkot has got absolutely nothing to do with the Anane Kavod. It's the fact that it was hot in the desert, as Rashi says, and so Subim Ne'achama, the Shat Haniyatana Yosin Sukkot, they needed a place to rest, they needed a place to have a bit of shade, so they made for themselves Sukkot while they were in the desert. And it struck me, just the other day, that all the chagim that we celebrate, be it Pesach, which is Yetzias Mitzrayim, Shavuot is Zman Matan Torateinu, Purim and Hanukkah, which represent Nisim, they all represent something that occurred to the Jewish people, and Hashem's hand over the timeline of Jewish history that did something to help out the Jews some way, and we commemorate that. What was Rabbi Akiva thinking when he said that the reason Jews keep Sukkot up until this very day has to be because they kept little booths that they created for themselves in the desert? What function of Avodas Hashem are we supposed to get out of that? If Rabbi Akiva is saying we keep Sukkot solely and primarily for the reason that the Jews made Sukkot for themselves, what has that got to do with anything, with Avodas Hashem? And notwithstanding that we don't actually paskin Rabbi Akiva, because the Torah says very clearly that the reason we keep Sukkot is because of the Anane HaKavod, nevertheless, there has to be some deeper meaning. So I was looking through the Mora Nevuchim of the Rambam in source 3. It's split up into 3 chapters, 3 halakim, for those who have never seen it before, and then each chalak has various prokim. This is the very last parak where he deals with the Mo'adim, and he says as follows. Sukkot, shekavanato lesimcha v'ched, that the whole purpose of Sukkot is have joy. Hushivat yamim kadesh yitfarsem hadavar. The reason we keep it is for 7 days to publicize what occurred. V'uva bahir batura madua hu ba'anadot. The Torah is quite clear why it occurs at this time of the year. Because it said, "Dostecha maasecha minaseh," with the gathering your crops from the field. Klamar b'shasha penuim menachim min ha'avodat b'ha'echrechim. When you are calm and collected to be able to focus on your work, that is when all your work is done. That's when we have Sukkot. Kevar Aristo siyem b'tishim min amidah shikachia. Aristotle, famous philosopher in Greek, he quoted something along these lines. Adatam amekuba ben ha'umas b'izvan ha'kodem. And this idea was well established amongst the nations of the world previously. Hu amar b'zeh alashon ha'devachim ha'kedumim. Right, pinasiot hayu le'achar asif ha'perot, kilu hem korbanot ba'avur panai. Okay, zeh l'shono. Kemo ken ha'yeshiv besukah be'otot tekufan nisbelet. We do it at this time because en chom chazak, it's not very hot, ve'lo geshem matrid, Rambam was not writing in England, obviously, and there's not a lot of rain. Shnei chagim ele gam yachad, these two festivals, klomar sukot ve'pesach, notnim da'at mida, there's a rationale behind them. Hadea be'pesach hi zecher otot mitzrayim v'anifchirtam ledorot. The reason we keep Pesach is because of the eternal miracles that Hashem did for us in Egypt. Ve'adea besukahi, ha'nitzchet otot ha'midbar ledorot, what occurred in the desert, ha'midahi, and here where the Rambam gets to the crux of the issue, she'iskor hadam tamid et yemei ha'mesukah b'yemei harvacha. Person has to always remember when he's having it good, when things are not always so good. Kedesh yitzikadel todato la'el, in order he should increase his gratitude to Hashem, that will result in a deep imbued humility within him. Etc. You've got to leave your fancy homes and go live in these miserable booths, especially in England, which are dripping wet. These people who live in the desert did the same. We once lived like this. That we left that, to live in adorned houses, in Hampstead Garden, a suburb with a Lexus in the driveway. Be'makom atov, in the best neighborhoods. Be'aporebi yoter be'ez be'chasen, referring to Eretz Yisrael. Ulefi atachtav le'avotam imresh ha'yun ha'shim shalemim, as he promised to our forefathers, Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov. And the Rashbam on the daf there actually clarifies this more succinctly in source 4. Ki basukot ha'shavti b'nei Yisrael, b'lo yishuv v'nachala, the Jewish people dwelt in these booths and it wasn't that pleasant. Why did they do this? Mitoch kach, because as a result of them going into Eretz Yisrael, where they had beautiful houses, titnu hoda'a, they'd be able to give gratitude to mishnatan lachem nachala u'batim mele'im kol tov, to the one that gave them tremendous homes filled with goodness. They won't say in their hearts that we were the ones that built these houses. Hashem gave us the means to do this. So therefore, seemingly, according to Rabbi Akiva, the rationale that we keep, perhaps this is what the Rambam means, according to Rabbi Akiva, that we keep Sukkot for 7 days, is because we have to be grateful that we once did not have it so good, and now we have it good. So therefore, I feel justified today in talking about the topic of Hakarat HaTov, of gratitude. Now, Chazal mentioned in several different locations that some of the major catastrophes that occurred to the Jewish people along the timeline of Jewish history occurred because of Kafui Tova, because of not being grateful. The mitzvah Kibud Avaim is also a mitzvah of gratitude. As Sefer Achinuch points out, that if someone does something positive for someone else, you're mechuyav, you're obliged to thank him. So how do we do that? That is expressed by Kibud Avaim, because children exist solely because of their parents. So the arena of halachot, of kibud avaim, is the way we express our gratitude to our parents. Okay, so you're saying, okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Nice British etiquette. But is there more, in fact, to gratitude than mitziyayin? Every cheder kid, even an Austri, knows that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't hit the Nile because of hakaras hatov. My dad once showed me the Kerem HaTzvi, asked the question, why is it that when the Jews left Egypt and they're standing at the Yam Suf, they have the Mitzrim behind them, and the Jews in front, and the sea in front, why don't they turn around and fight? They know God's on their side, they've just seen 10 miracles, turn around and fight. And the answer is that the Egyptians paid host to the Jewish people for 210 years, and therefore it would show a lack of respect and gratitude if they fought them. Furthermore, there's a story in a book called Noble Lives, Noble Deeds by Archgold Rav Gusman, who was once a dayan in Vilna before the war, and after the war he moved to America and eventually moved to Israel. He was a Rosh Shiva in Eretz Israel. And a very strange custom. He used to come out every Friday morning and he used to water the ornamental plants outside the yeshiva. And his Talmidim once asked him, he said, Rosh Shiva's function is to provide spiritual guidance to his Talmidim. You're not a gardener. What are you doing? So he said, I'll tell you what I'm doing. Yes, he says, because during the war, I escaped from the Nazis and I lived in the forest for 2 years. And the only thing that kept me going was the plants and the grass. So here in Eretz Israel, where it doesn't rain often, I feel I can give gratitude, I can pay back the plants that survived, that gave me survival for 2 years, by watering them. Okay. Moving on a little bit further, we find that there's a mitzvah of Bikurim. And the Midrash says, it's one of the Midrash, the Bitzchud mitzvah of Bikurim, shenikaru reshit nivra olam. One of the three reasons that the world was created, or justified in being created, was the mitzvah of Bikurim. So the Al-Sheikh over there brings the following idea, and he says that the Mishnah in Bikurim tells us, shekol bale umniyot, Omdim bifnei mevi bikurim v'shoelim bishlomam. At this point, we know we have a halakha that says don't say much about people nowadays, but an employer who is employing people is not allowed, the employee is not allowed to stop work during the day to have a quick phone call, to have a chat with someone, to greet someone, because of gezer. It's called theft. Nevertheless, Chazal, our rabbi, said, we'll waver this halakha. When the Jewish people are coming up to Eretz Yisrael to bring bikurim, you're allowed to go and say, how are you doing, and welcome. Why? Because the obligation to be makir tovah, says the Al-Sheikh, is one of the tenets of avodas Hashem. Hashem gave man an abundance of goods, of life, of food, of health, family, of friends, of parnasa, of houses, of cars. And if we recognize that goodness, and we attune and sensitize to the one who gives us everything, that is a tremendous milah. So the Torah goes all out and says, okay, you workers, you stop, the people are coming, you go and say hello to them. Because Hashem is the one that allowed his blessings to flow into the land, and it's because of him we have to be grateful. And therefore the Al-Sheikh says that even if a person only has one grain of wheat, he still has to bring Bikurim. In his words, "Kedei la'biya b'kach hakarat ha'tov l'mi shenatan lo kol tov," in order to imbue within this person the concept of gratitude. So creation was therefore justified because of this mitzvah. I remember seeing a couple of years ago in one of the books of Rabbi Friend, he quoted this Al-Sheikh somewhat, And then he said, this is all very nice, but why does that justify creation? So if I remember correctly, he quoted a Pachad Yitzhak or Rav Hutna, who said something along the following lines, that Hakarat HaTov, gratitude, defines the very core of a human being. All the classic Sifrei Musa tell us, the man's function in this world is to elevate himself and get as close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as possible. Mahu Rachum, Achanu Rachum, we have to emulate his way. Now Hashem, by definition, is infinite, and that means he requires nothing and lacks nothing. And yet he's constantly giving to us 24-7. And we can never give him anything back in return, and that is how he set up this world. So we arrive here as babies, which are the ultimate receivers. We're helpless as babies and depend on our parents for everything. Our parents nurture us, and then our teachers enrich our minds. And then our spouses and our children and our families give us emotional support and give us companionship. So we are takers from day one, and you can't avoid that. And yet our mission is to become like Hashem, who is the ultimate giver. So there's been this paradox. How do we overcome that? So Rav Hutna suggests there's only one way of doing that. And that is Hakarat HaTov. That is, or referred to as gratitude. Because by expressing gratitude, what we are doing is taking that act of taking and making it an act of giving. You're shifting the focus away from your benefactor, the guy who's giving you something, and acknowledging what he's done for you, and therefore your act, that act of taking becomes an act of giving. And so, through Hakarat HaTov, says Rav Hutna, we are becoming closer to Hashem because we are becoming like Hashem, who is the ultimate giver. So in the story of Rav Gusman and Moshe Rabbeinu the Yamsuf, Moshe Rabbeinu not hitting the Nile, and the Jewish people by the Yamsuf, they were more than just being etiquettely correct, if there is such a word. Their acts defined their very essence and transformed them into being takers, from being takers into givers. The story I saw in Moreshet Avot about Rav Schwab. Rav Schwab was once a Talmud in the Mir before World War II. And back then people had no online banking, no credit cards. And the Talmidim basically had no money whatsoever. If they wanted to go home for Pesach, they couldn't just call up the local travel agent. They went to Rabbi Yeruchan Levin with the Mashkiach, and they asked for a loan. The loan was used to buy a train ticket, and when they came back, they repaid the loan. So he went up to Rav Schwab one year. Rav Schwab went up to Rabbi Yochum Leibovitz and he said, I'd like some money for a train ticket to go back home. He said, no problem, here it is. Whereupon Rav Schwab turned to Rabbi Yochum Leibovitz and he said, thank you very much. So Yochum started to reprimand him. He said, no, you're not allowed to say thank you. What do you mean say thank you? Manners. He says, no, it's not manners. Because Chazal tell us, ribit devarim. The borrower is giving you back more than you've given him. It's ribbit devarim, it's interest with words, you're not allowed to say thank you. So he learned the lesson, and he absorbed it, and he went home. Came back, he paid back the funds. A year later, he came to get another ticket. He asked, can I have some money for a train ticket? No problem. And this time, he remembered, he didn't say thank you. So Yeruchim Leibovitz turns to Rabbi Shimon Schwab and says, no thank you. Listen, last year you screamed at me when I said thank you. This year I don't say it, and you're telling me off? Make up your mind. So he said, no, you're right. You're not allowed to say thank you. But your body language should show that you want to say thank you. Only there's a gebul. There's an Issur Torah that's preventing you from saying thank you, but your body language should want to express that thank you, and I don't see that. So here we have Hakarat HaTov in its purest form. When you're borrowing money, are you a giver or are you a taker? My father once mentioned to me, I had a question, he gave me the answer. And in his opinion, it's the best book by Art Scroll, Rav Shimon Schwab on prayer. He said every day, we haven't got one on the wall, we say the Modim Derabbanan, which Abu Dharam points out, the reason we say Modim Derabbanan is because the Shaliach Sibur is saying thanks. When it comes to saying thanks, you can't have a messenger. You've got to do it yourself. At the end of that Modim Derabbanan prayer, we say the word Baruch Hel Adot. Baruch Hel Adot, blesses the God of thanks. Which is very peculiar and very bizarre. We have, blessed is the God of mercy, the God of kindness. I mean, blessed is the God of thanks. If anyone dawned on them when you say this every day. It's a rather bizarre expression. And Rav Schwab in his shiurim over there explains, amazing idea, that Hakarat HaTov, gratitude, is not instinctive. Life which we live 24/7, hopefully 120 years, it's taken for granted because as long as you remember, you've always been alive. And hakarat hatov shown by kids to parents is only reciprocal. Say thank you. Why? Because they know if they say thank you, then they get it back. Or what's the magic word? You're not going to get that unless you say please and thank you. Reminds me of the story of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Once came, a couple came to him with a young kid, and he gave the kid a lollipop. Shlomo Zalman said to him, the parents said to him, no, say thank you. He said, thank you. So afterwards, he said to his parents, he taught me a lesson. He says, only saying thank you because you asked me to say thank you. He says, how many things does Hashem give to us on a daily basis and we just say thank you? You've got to mean it. Just say thank you. So says Rav Shimon Schwab, the concept of Hakarat HaTov is a gift from Hashem himself. Because a child will never say thank you. He will never learn to say thank you unless he was taught to say thank you. So we thank Hashem for instilling within our minds on a daily basis the concept of Hakarat HaTov. Because without that gift, we would all be ingrates. Complete ingrates. So therefore we say every day, Baruch El Adot. Moving on swiftly, there's a well-known Gemara in Barachot that says, Amar Yehuda Mishum Rishim Bar Yochai, Miyom Shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu Et Olamo Lo Haya Adam Shehoda LeHaKadosh Baruch Hu Ad Shebata Le'a Behodato Shenemar HaPam Odet Hashem. That from the very beginning of the creation of the world, no one ever thanked Hashem until Leah came along and thanked Hashem. So all the Mepharshim asked the obvious question, what do you mean? When she had Reuben, Shimon, and Levi, she didn't thank Hashem. The Avot HaKadosh Hashem, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov never thanked Hashem. Adam never thanked Hashem. Noach never thanked Hashem. What does that mean? No one ever thanked Hashem. Now Leah was a bit of a mathematician. She worked out very clearly that there's four wives, so three, 12 children has to be born, three from each. So after she had her third child, she had more than her share. Apam odet Hashem, so she thought that she owed a debt of gratitude to Hashem. She called her son Yehuda. But in retrospect, this ma'amar of Chazal, this statement of Chazal, actually makes no sense whatsoever. Because if I were to ask you the question, who deserves more praise? The person who receives his proper share and feels indebted to Hashem? Or the person who receives more than his share and feels indebted to Hashem? Or we say the former. The person who receives what he's supposed to get has to thank Hashem. So I saw an interesting idea from the Magishim and Mir Yeshiva of David Kviat. He said, what was so praiseworthy about Leah's behavior? Is that she viewed what she was getting as more than her fair share. Human natural tendency is such that we view what we receive in life as something that they had coming to them. Anyone who's ever lived in Israel will know the famous colloquial, Magiali! That's what the Israelis say. Is it Magiali? Ma'ad, Magiali! They're right, everything is coming their way. So if I'm earning 50 grand a year, which I'm not, and my friend's earning half a million a year, so the friend is earning half a million, it's very difficult for him perhaps to recognize his great fortune. Because he'll say, listen, I worked hard at school, I got 3 A's at A-level, I went to Cambridge, I worked hard, I'm smarter and more clever. Magiali, I earned this on my own. It was coming to me. The novelty of Leah Imenu's statement was that we see that a person has the ability to step back, take in the whole framework of schemes, and look at the situation objectively and come to the conclusion that I am getting more than I deserve. And that's not the normal tendency. The normal in life is to say, either I'm getting my fair share, or I'm getting less than I deserve. No one ever says I'm getting more than I deserve. That was Leah. So Miyom Shebara Olam, from the creation of the world up until Leah, no one ever came along with that frame of mind to say that I'm getting more than I deserve and then thank Hashem. So our ideal attitude in life has to be that when a person thanks Hashem, one should feel that everything we have is a gift. Totally undeserved. I mean, that is the ideal. And that this attitude can open up the world within the heart for gratitude by Hakarat HaTov. Rav Palm once pointed out that when one achieves a happy milestone in life, be it a newborn child, bringing a child to the chuppah, a bar mitzvah, a financial achievement. So at that point in life, one's gratitude to Hashem flows from the heart. Yet as time passes by, one gets used to the good fortune and the joy begins to dissipate. And as the happiness is burdened with the responsibility to provide for a spouse, to provide for the child, or to handle this new level of financial responsibility, so the initial euphoria, the initial ecstasy is replaced by exhaustion and stress. And this is a very well-known psychological understanding of the human psyche. And Leah knew this. So as a happy mother of the fourth child, says Rav Palm, She wanted to permanently ingrain her initial simcha of having her fourth child Yehuda. So she put the root of the word Hoda'a in her son's name Yehuda. So every single time she's going to call Yehuda, Yehuda, time for bed, time in, whatever it is, she'll remember the thanks that she had initially. Now Yosef Chaim Baghdad, the Ben Ish Chai, suggests we can understand this a little bit deeper with a moshel. He said there was once a king who engaged two craftsmen to build an additional wing to his palace. And the two arrived on the scene and began to work on the project. One of them, as soon as he walked to the palace, felt awfully ill. He was taken to the royal quarters and the medics dealt with him 24-7. The other carried on working, and at the end of the month, the wing was complete. And he sent paychecks to both of the workers, the one that he paid for working and the one who didn't work because he wasn't well. Upon arriving home, both workers sent a letter of gratitude to the king. The king then sent the worker who did the job a bonus check, but the other one he sent nothing. So the servants looked puzzled at the king and said, Your Majesty, is the craftsman's letter who didn't do any work but you paid anyways any less beautiful than the other guy? Why are you only sending a bonus check to the first one? He said, No, on the contrary, it's even more beautiful. However, his thanks was obligatory because I paid him even though he didn't work. The other guy received pay for rent services that were rendered. It was due to him. And nevertheless, he felt an urge to thank me for a right that was due to him. That kind of thanks deserves special notice. Says the Ben Ish Chai, Hashem sends his heavenly miracles, heavenly aid and help to Jewish people in two ways. Either in the miraculous way or in the natural way. So when we're witness to a miracle, we're quick to praise Hashem for his kindness. However, it's more commendable, says the Ben Ish Chai, when we take notice of the daily chesed, the daily chasadim, the kindnesses and protection that Hashem provides in the undramatic, natural fashion. This behavior on our part will invoke hashgacha pratit for us if we recognize it. So when we want to give back something to Hashem, says the Ben Ish Chai, we know that we can't do that because he set up the world that way. And still he wants us to be always cognizant of the fact that we have a debt towards him. So he gives us the mitzvah of Bikurim. It's our recognition and thankfulness that behooves us to return to Hashem the very first, which is always the very best of what He gave us. And it's for not for some small thing, as we said earlier, that Bikurim justified the creation of the world. Dr. Leibovitz divides his time providing medical services in his hometown of Boston and Yerushalayim. And he told Rabbi Kron a couple of years back the following story, which gave him a completely new perspective on life, and the same for all that hear it. As a senior resident in the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, he's in charge of the emergency room, the ER room, and like all other ER rooms throughout the country and throughout the world, there's a flurry of doctors and nurses attending to patients according to the severity of the situation. If a person's had a stroke, then he can't be kept waiting. Even if a person's broken his ankle in a car accident, as painful as it is, he's going to have to wait. And all this takes place with the constant noise and beats of the cardiographs and the monitors. So one day he's making his rounds of the hospital when he hears the loudspeaker shout out, Code Blue. Code Blue, for those of you who are not doctors, is an alert to a life-threatening warning. There was a woman in the cafeteria on the top floor who suffered a severe heart attack, and she was in cardiac arrest. So he grabbed his equipment, he raced upstairs, and doctors were already working on her. As the customers were sent out of the cafe, there was a security guard standing at the door. He only allowed the medical personnel to come in. And the doctor said to him, Dr. Leibovitz, I'm afraid it's too late. We've been working on her for about 20 minutes already. It's too late. He said, let me try. So he quickly moved towards and inserted an intravenous catheter into her heart to get her started on epinephrine, which would prevent further progression of the blood clot to her coronary artery. He applied the two large paddles to her body to send an electric shock to try and jumpstart the heart back into normal rhythm. And he tried a few times to get the heartbeat to going, but nothing, he was unsuccessful. And the other doctors began to leave the room, shaking their heads, sighing, we've let a patient die right before our eyes. However, he wouldn't give up. He tried a fifth time and a sixth time, but it wasn't happening. The heartbeat was still dead. And he realized the end was near if it hadn't already come, but he tried one more time. So a seventh time he tried, he pressed the control button on the defibrillator with added emphasis. And he glanced at the monitor and the razor thin line darted upward and he screamed out, we've got life! We've got a heartbeat! So then, fused with hope and determination, he worked frantically to continue the heart's revival, and with effort, he managed to stimulate the pulse of the heart. Eventually, he ordered the medics to take this woman to the ICU, as a care unit. And her progress was slow but steady. He returned to the ER room a bit later on to continue with his duties, and every now and then he would call the ICU to see how this lady is getting on. 6 hours later, he was told the good news that she's sitting up in bed, and he wondered, should I go up and visit her? He said, after all, she wasn't her patient. He doesn't need gratitude. He's in this profession to help people. But on the other hand, with a name like Christina, she obviously wasn't Jewish, and a name like Leibovitz, which was very obviously Jewish, it would be a massive Kiddush Hashem that we emulate the ways of the Creator, Verachamav al Kol Ma'asav. We are compassionate to every single person in this world, not just the Jews. So he walked into the room, and he's not sure how he's going to introduce himself, when the man sitting next to her said, he's the one that saved your life. And he says, and who are you? He says, I'm the husband. And I saw you working on her. Where were you at the time? I was behind the glass window, and they whisked me out, and I saw the doctors walk out, and I saw you working on her. And the woman began to cry uncontrollably. And he stood there rather embarrassed, and he waited for her to gain her composure. And what she said to him, he'll never forget. She said to him as follows, what do I say? I say, thank you. He says, that's what you say when someone opens the door for you and holds it open and you walk in. Except in Israel. You don't say thank you to someone who's given your life back. He says, but I'll tell you this. When I go home tomorrow and I see my children and I remember you, I'm going to say thank you, Dr. Lake. And in a week's time when I take a walk with my husband, I'll think of you and I'll say, thank you, Dr. Leibovitz. And in a few weeks' time when I go out with my friends, I'm going to say and think of you and I'm going to say, thank you, Dr. Leibovitz. And when I have my next birthday, I will say, thank you, Dr. Leibovitz. So her words were very simple and very powerful. And when he left the room and he walked out into the hospital corridor, he said to no one but himself, when I come home after today's work, I see my wife and family, I'm going to say, thank you, Hashem. And next time I have the privilege to stand in your presence in Dublin, I'm going to say thank you, Hashem. And the next time I have the ability to walk upstairs and not be out of breath, I'm going to say thank you, Hashem. So it's the message of Sukkot, which is Hakarat HaTov, according to the Rambam and the Rashbam, and perhaps Rabbi Akiva itself. This message of gratitude is something we have to imbue and absorb into our daily lives. And when we go home now after the Shia and see our wives and family, we all know.